unperturbed, calming beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch means it's Thursday, 10 p.m., and time for the always live So What's Your Story, only on KPFT 90.1, the coolest place on your dial because it's the only program originating in Houston that is devoted entirely to storytelling, where storytellers, from starters to stars, deliver heart-rending personal narratives, waggish folk tales, and everything in between. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Houston downtown, with interns Roxy Russell and Shannon McKerchie, both stepping in nervously for me last week and doing a great job while I was losing my money and my mind in Vegas. It was so relaxing. It really was, yeah. Listen, I've got to take a moment to thank all of you for your very generous donations during our summer sizzle. And we were sizzling. You made it clear that storytelling matters, and its revival is essential to our city. It's all about you, because you deserve the best programming we can offer, and thanks to you, we're going to keep giving them to you. You folks rock. You know, storytelling is the only art form where the teller and the audience need to be present. The story, its teller, and the audience connect on a very special level. With this connection, guest tellers take us on a journey. Sometimes fanciful, oftentimes poignant, but always absorbing. Along the way, we're reminded of our imperfections, strengths, and gifts. We validate ourselves. We learn how to fit in, or not. We laugh, moan, whimper, and cry, repeatedly and curiously unabashed about expressing ourselves. We learn resilience and about the forces that help to produce them. We feel something, thanks to this thing called story. The story becomes real, and when the journey is over, the teller returns us safely to the present. Well, tonight, each of us has a ticket for yet another journey, one on which will be taken by my guest, Joyce Scott. Joyce is founder of Superb Speakers and Trainers Bureau, an established international firm that retains some 130 experts in a variety of subjects, all of whom are charged with helping to solve business performance problems for a number of clients. Her company has conducted training for Harley-Davidson, Spectra Dynamics, Wyndham Resorts, American Express, the Texas Education Agency, United Space Alliance, and Counterpoint Energy, just to name a few. Her experts have been cited and endorsed by the likes of Fortune Magazine, the Kiplinger Report, Harvard Business Review, Black Enterprise, CNN, Forbes, the New York Times bestseller list, and many more. Joyce Scott's resume continues with a plethora of impressive entries, but the one that got her in this studio was her performance at the Moth earlier this year. Joyce, how are you?
I'm great.
I loved talking to you earlier. I really did. That one of the reasons I like having people come earlier is I get to know them, and I just love getting to know you. Can you give us a couple of examples of the types of problems that your experts attempt to solve?
Often it has something to do with a festering problem that's performance-based. It might be sales, or it might be something to do with leadership or teams not working together well. You know, communications problems.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you recruit your experts?
Usually people recommend them.
Yeah.
It's been very, very fortunate that someone will hear a fantastic speaker that's little known, but has a background in actually doing what they talk about.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, actually, there aren't too many people like that. There are an awful lot of people who talk about things. Mm-hmm. But you're right. People who actually take that content and have applied it at one level or another, it isn't that easy. You know, Joyce, we had a great time, I think, communicating via email. And I really did learn a great deal about your style and about the kind of color and texture that you put in your stories. They have interesting flavor, and what I've noticed based on what you've sent me and what I think is that your personal stories are really laced with many lessons in resilience and self-confidence, which together, for me at least, seem to operate as a working formula for tolerance. And your first story, Live Your Destiny, is set during pre-civil rights, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tell us your story.
You know, I was a 7-year-old girl in Beaumont, Texas, a black kid. My mother was divorced. And the nun, who was my teacher, kept me after class one day, and I thought, Well, you know, it's not that unusual because I talk too much in school, so I figured I was in trouble yet again. But she kept me after class, and she looked me straight in the eye, had me stand really close to her face. She leaned over and said, "I want to tell you something, honey. I want to help you. You must understand what God intends for you. You're black. You're a girl. You beat the boys in math class. You go out and beat the kids on the schoolyard. Your mother's a divorcee, and she's the only divorcee in this church." Mm-hmm. This is 1950-something in Catholic school. And she said, "You just have to learn your place, honey." And I'm looking at her, and I'm thinking, okay. And she said, "It is God's will for you to stay in your place."
Wow.
She said, "You're underprivileged. Don't you understand?" Well, I listened to her, and I was very distracted by the fact that her breath was not so good. Her teeth were yellow. And I couldn't figure out if I was really in trouble or not. But I went home that afternoon, and I was doing my homework, either my vocabulary words or my math, because I was a math geek. And my mother was cooking soup or gumbo. I was in Beaumont, so we did a lot of gumbo shit. And she was stirring this big pot with a big spoon. And I said, very proudly, like a seven-year-old little girl, and I said, "You know what? I learned a new word today." And my mother was very tired. She'd work 2-3 jobs sometimes. And she said, "What word? What's the word?" And I said, "I'm underprivileged." It was a big word, so I was impressed. I thought this was a really good word. She turned around, and I swear I could feel the wind move. My mother's about 5 feet tall. And she scared me to death because she started walking toward me with that big spoon in her hand. And I knew I'd done something wrong. And she said, "Do you have a place to live?" And I said, "Yeah." And she kept walking toward me, and I thought, oh, no. She said, "Do you have enough to eat?" I said, "Yeah." And she was in my face, and I thought, another person in my face today. And she said, "Do enough people love you?" And I thought I had to guess the answer was probably right to say yes. And she said, "Don't ever let anyone call you anything you don't understand. You don't even know what that word means. It's a big word, but you don't know what that means." So I took it as my freedom, because my mother still does novenas. She does rosaries. She prays all the time. She's a good Catholic woman. And if I had the power at 7 years old to not listen to a nun about her label for me, oh, well, I don't care who you are. You were talking about self-confidence.
Yeah.
Oh, that helped a lot.
Yeah.
I had a grandmother who also was there, and she helped me with a lot of things. Wow. So the thing that happened is having that kind of lesson very early, that I was never to listen to anyone whose life I wouldn't live. That's the way I interpreted it. Mm-hmm. That probably this nun, and I learned later in years, that she really had a very bitter life. She'd been sent to America from Ireland. She wanted to marry a man. She was in a poor Irish Catholic family, and they'd give up a boy and a girl. And so she was the Catholic nun for that family. And so she was a very bitter woman who later I learned was a chain smoker and was angry about a lot of things. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just me. Yeah. It wasn't so much that I was the target. So I learned, as far as tolerance, that I couldn't hold a grudge against this woman. She had her own backstory. And I didn't learn this until I was the church secretary at 16.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she was there long enough to see me become the secretary at that church.
Wow. What do you, in retrospect, what do you think she meant by underprivileged, now that you think about it? What do you think she meant by that?
Well, the other kids came from intact families.
Mm-hmm.
Their school uniforms were not one or two skirts and one or two blouses. They had multiples that they could rotate. I didn't. They had shoes that were much nicer than me. I didn't. I grew up in the ghetto, in the projects in the ghetto. They weren't living in that. They had a house. And I was underprivileged. Mm-hmm. But you know what? That gave me a lot of power, because what I've learned through my life is that I can thrive in any situation, because I was really very privileged to start out underprivileged.
Yeah. So as soon as somebody tells you you can't do something, that's your cue to do it even better.
Well, right? You know, and I never knew that mm-hmm. was the way I operated until I went back in retrospect, and people started saying, do you know that so-and-so said this and you did that? And I'd have to think about it, because I think sometimes it's in your subconscious mind versus your
conscious. Strong people do that, Joyce. Yeah. Strong people do that. You are listening to guest teller Joyce Scott, CEO of Superb Speakers and Trainers Bureau on So What's Your Story? This is your host, Hank Rubicek, with Roxy and Shannon on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, or KPFT.org if you are listening online. But whatever channels you chose, we are glad you did. Joyce, this is a tough question coming at you, but I want to ask this because it seems to be sort of a, not so much a running theme, but it's a context in a lot of your stories, and that's the pre-civil rights. In your honest opinion, has civil rights taught us to become a more tolerant nation? I know that's a loaded question. It's a tough one.
You know what? At any moment, I understand there are about 38 wars all over the world, and most of them have something to do with people hating people because of heritage. It's an unfortunate thing that has come down in all of our backgrounds, no matter what your culture is. So civil rights was an episode in our country that started some conversations that we're still suppressing.
Yeah. I think you're right. I really do agree with that. And I was thinking that thinking about what Dalai Lama the 24th said. He says, in the practice of tolerance, one's enemy is the best teacher. And I think that's really very, very true. You know, John F. Kennedy also talked very eloquently about diversity. And of course, in those days, as you well know, the whole notion was that liberals had the answer. You know, we had the answer. That's not necessarily true. But, you know, the kind of relationship between Kennedy and Martin Luther King was so strong that I do think it was a very powerful duo. And Kennedy said that if we cannot end our differences, at least we can help make the world safe for diversity. That's a quote I really do like, because diversity is a blessing. It's not a constraint.
Yes.
And we don't get it. I don't know if I mentioned to you, but I'm a docent at the Holocaust Museum.
Yeah.
And it's a place, it's a museum of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And we try very hard to teach kids that, you know, tolerance is a verb. It's not just a matter of saying, yeah, I'll be tolerant. It's a matter of saying, you know, when you hear a racist joke, you don't have to laugh.
Exactly.
You don't have to laugh, right? If a kid drops a tray in a cafeteria, you don't have to stand and applaud with your friends. You can help the person pick up the food.
Exactly.
Right? There are little things that we can do, and I think it's important to understand that. Joyce, you know, you had a lot of success in the corporate career, obviously, and it came in sort of unexpected ways, and I think that's what your next narrative is going to explain. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, share that with us.
You know, I had no intention of working for a big company like IBM. Actually, when the lady who recruited me did so, I was concerned about giving her my resume because I was intimidated. After all, I am this girl who grew up in the projects of Beaumont, Texas. Now, when she was recruiting me, by then, I was an IT manager at 29 years old. I had no idea that was a big deal. Because I was busy. I was a mom. My kids just really took up my life. So it didn't matter to me that to her that was impressive. But when I did go on the interview, the man who interviewed me was absolutely fantastic. And by the way, this is a theme through my life. People who looked like the other side, when you talk about tolerance, have been the primary people who've helped me throughout my life. I had a teacher in high school who did that. I had just the reverse of that nun in IBM, in this young woman who didn't know me, really, who recruited me. And the man who interviewed me and sent me on, even though IBM was in a hiring freeze. And when I did get into IBM, the thing that happened was that I realized that my job for what they intended me to do was to go in and turn around accounts they'd lost. So I usually looked like somebody very different, right, than they had. I was in Tulsa, Oklahoma at the time, and the rest of the time I was in IBM, I was in St. Louis, Missouri. And people who looked like me didn't take on responsibility of leadership in that company. But what happened is I had such a fantastic opportunity with the help of a lot of people who didn't look like me. And I learned to do extra homework to really understand what I was doing. And my last year in IBM, after managing people who didn't look like me for years, who, when I was announced as their boss, would usually almost have whiplash when they saw that I was the new boss. And, you know, it wasn't so much my race. They were white guys, mm-hmm. and they were all guys. It was that I was a younger woman. They were afraid to have their money messed up by some younger woman. And for many of them, they would say something to me, if you're having a drink together after some big thing or whatever, they'd say, "How are you managing this as a mother?"
Wow.
And because sometimes we had to travel, yeah. or sometimes we had to do some things. And it was as if they were perplexed that a young mother could get in, and my job was turning around accounts who hated our guts. So, you know, I'd come in. I learned how to do the strategy. I went to Harvard, IBM, because I was mm-hmm. a top performer, sent me to Harvard. Mm-hmm. I learned competitive advantage before other people. I had a lot of time reading. I'm a library geek, so I research everything. And I'd come in with, this is how we can get things done. So my last year in IBM, I decided to step out of management. And the guys I'd managed years before, because I had two surgeries for misdiagnosed cancer that year.
Misdiagnosed.
Major surgery.
Two of them.
Two in about 5 months. And these guys kept hearing, and these are guys I'd managed before. And, of course, we broke records and did really well while they were with me. And what my obsession was when I was with them was to help them, because some young man would usually whisper to me, who was a boss, "I want you to get rid of them. They're dead wood." And what I would do is help them to not only revive their career but have a superior year, because then they could leverage that. And so they helped me to become IBM's number one salesperson in all of North America.
Amazing. That is amazing. You know, this is your host, Hank Grubacek, with guest teller Joyce Scott. I'm just mesmerized by some of the things that you're saying. So what's your story? Only on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. Joyce, what is the common denominator in the two stories that you told?
You know, what I think it is that we as people must start looking at each other and understanding what are the gems, what is the value,
beautiful,
and what can we bring. You know, people use language in business today where they say give first and all that, and it becomes a slogan. And the unfortunate thing I see is management and leadership by slogan mm-hmm. versus actually believing it. Shakespeare said, "Be careful what you pretend to be, that is what you will become."
Excellent.
So what I tended to do was pay attention to what I wanted to become. So do it on purpose with mm-hmm, a purpose. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I looked at these guys in IBM as folks who were building up my stock value, mm-hmm, right?
Right.
So that's my selfish goal. Yeah. But what I also looked at was, here with these guys, I'd gone through racism, I'd gone through sexism, and they're going through ageism. So why would I add to their burden when I know what it takes?
Yeah.
And so the thing is, if it's tolerance, you've got to demonstrate the reverse of discrimination.
Very good.
So
So it is a sort of, it's an action term. You have to think. So the lesson then is about tolerance. It's about mm-hmm. addressing tolerance in a very proactive way.
In a very aggressive way, I might say, because today it's passive.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it is. It is. You know, mm-hmm. but something you said a moment ago really struck me. I've been when I do consulting for some organizations, I'm sometimes privy to their meetings, and they say things like, "Well, you know, we're going to give X amount of money to this charity," and they have no idea what charity it is.
Right.
And they don't care. And mm-hmm. I think to myself, you're making a big deal out of it. You're talking about it. Is that really charity? And it really isn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, in a theoretical sense of the word. And what you said a little bit early really strikes, because
it is an emblem. It's an artifact. It's sort of a symbol which stands for something that it isn't. It isn't
right.
Generosity. It isn't. Mm-hmm. It isn't openness. It isn't charity.
Yeah.
It isn't anything. It's just. It's some sort of plastic mechanism that presents a corporate facade that gives the impression of something that doesn't even exist. Does that make sense?
Well, I think Ida? Good corporate social responsibility really does pay off.
Yeah.
I mean, when I look at Bill
yes.
Gates giving away half of his money,
well,
he can't spend that
no,
before
no,
he dies,
no,
right?
No.
But he's developing new markets
yeah.
as well,
mm-hmm.
isn't he?
Yeah.
But he's also living a life where he probably won't have regrets. That's been the element
yeah.
in my life. And
yeah.
that's why at this age, I'm still running and gunning because
yeah.
I believe I want to live the rest of my life with no regrets.
Now, that is a brilliant thought. It's worth punctuating. It really is. You know, when you define someone's life, sometimes I talk about the importance of what people will say at your eulogy. But when you really get down to it, it's living a life of no regrets.
Exactly.
Living a life of no regrets. Now, speaking of regrets, hey, how did you guys like last week? You know, Roxy and Shannon.
Dr. Hank.
What?
You are a tough act to follow.
Yeah.
It's impossible
yeah, yeah, yeah.
to fill your
Now, when
shoes.
You say that, you know, I think about Heisenberg in Breaking Away, right? Roxy, you were a big fan of the show. Remember that
You mean
one?
Breaking Bad?
Breaking Bad, excuse me. Yeah, you knew what I meant. But in any event, I'm thinking, you know, if I were to say, like, say my name, you might say, well, who are you? I don't know you. And I would say, yeah, you know me. I'm the one who gave you a shot at the radio. I'm the one who exposes you to Houston's best. Now, say my name, Dr. Hank.
Dr. Hank
right.
Rubicek.
Yes, you're blank, blank, right. That's what I really want to say, right? That's
All
what
right.
I have to say. That I just felt compelled to do that. You guys did a great job. You know, vacation in Vegas is interesting. I don't know why anybody thinks, Joyce, that it's relaxing. I had an unfortunate revelation. Quick story. And a very unfortunate revelation. My wife, who had no idea what she was doing, of course, was winning money. Your Aunt Peggy won money. But I'm sitting there losing my mind and my money, and I'm sitting there at a slot machine. It's a penny slot machine. A penny slot machine. Now, I'm thinking to myself, I'm a father. I'm a grandfather. I'm an intelligent person. I have a PhD. I've got a good job. I'm well-read. I believe in God. Why, then, am I looking at Dolly Parton's breasts, hoping that the terms bonus will emerge from them? That's what I'm trying to think. And I'm thinking, there's something really wrong here. Yeah, let's go to Las Vegas. Okay, in the meantime, listen, I know that you're a Moth fan.
Yes.
Right? You're a Moth fan. And I know this is going to be a tremendously leading question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I would imagine now that you're a tremendous fan of the show.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody
says
that.
And I've listened to other stories.
Yes.
And you've had some outstanding people.
We do.
Fantastic.
And you are one of them, and that's the
well,
truth.
Thank you.
What was the topic at the Moth the night that you were there?
You know, I can't remember what it was.
She was there. She's there a lot.
Okay.
First of
well,
all.
I'm yeah. asking a very simple question, Roxy. What was the topic?
There was pride.
It was the karma?
It was karma the first
okay,
night that
you.
I spoke.
All
that's
right. what, okay.
And I think
all
that's
right.
when I talked about the nun was the karma.
The nun.
Yes.
Karma.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, good. Roxy, you were there. What was it about Joyce's story that told you that her style belonged on this show? What convinced you?
Well, not only her connection to all of her stories, I love how they're all so personal. Even talking to her out here, her business stories are so personal, but also all of the details that she has in her stories make it like you are literally the fly on the wall in the room,
right.
and you know everything that's going on.
It just
so
unfolds and you're there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
I believe that, and that's what makes a storyteller work. Takes you on a journey. Takes you on a journey, and you don't want to leave. You just don't want to leave, and that's something that lots of people can't do, but we are natural storytellers, as I make a big deal, and
mm-hmm.
I think it's a kind of skill set that so many people really have to cultivate for all the right reasons, all the right reasons. You know, next week, speaking about all the right reasons, we have pulled out the stops next week, and we have a whole new dimension of storytellers when Sarah Alavi and Rocco Steady, who actually wrote the theme song to Houston, the Houston theme song. Anybody
oh.
sing it? That's what I thought. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll learn it next week. But they're
going to
be
hear
they're,
me
they're,
sing.
Yeah. Well, you know,
I, if it's between you and me, I'd rather hear you. Let's just say that. But they're going to spotlight their story-rich, peace-anchored music, sort of a resurgence. It's going back to the 60s in many ways. It's another show that you don't want to miss. Shannon will feed you information about Sarah and Rocco during the week, just as she does all the time, on the So What's Your Story Facebook. Isn't that right, Shannon?
Right, Hank. After doing research, I post information about all our guests, as well as articles about storytelling, storytellers, festivals, and lots more. Just check us out and like us on the way out so I can keep you in the loop.
Right. Thank you, Shannon. Also, a hearty thank you to our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, the best place with the best people to learn to tell, listen, and just plain enjoy the art of telling. Rossi, tell us when and where they meet, please.
Hank, the Guild meets on the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Multi-Service Center at 1475 West Gray.
Thanks, Roxy. We just met this past Tuesday, so get to our next meeting on September 16th. And you won't forget, just go to www.HoustonStorytellers.org for meeting reminders and dates for all the fun happenings. It's truly a great, great group. Joyce, you know, we're just about out of time, but tell us a little bit about the kind of stories that you were exposed to as a child that you liked.
My grandmother lived to be 101. She was half American Indian, she was really the key person to tell stories. And then my father's father lived to be 89, and he would tell me stories. And I took it seriously that I was the one to bring the stories to the family. So that's what started it.
That's wonderful. My great-grandfather died at 104. Well, actually, it was 104. He got married when he was 93 to an 84-year-old woman and said, I like when younger
men. There's
that's
hope.
The truth.
There is hope.
He smelled two packs of Winston's every day. Yeah, he died at almost, he was just about to turn 104. Must have been the cigarettes. I don't know. In any event, that must have been it.
Good genes.
This was great. Now, you see, we're almost done. What do you think?
Yeah. This was outstanding.
Easy schmeasy,
lots
huh?
of fun. This and so was, I hope lots was, of my friends had a chance to listen.
Oh, my gosh, yes. My gosh, yes. I hope everybody listened. Right, Shannon? You made that possible for everybody to... Okay, very, very good. Good. You know, Voltaire proclaimed, think of yourself and let others enjoy the privilege of doing so, too. Got to be ourselves, right? We have to be ourselves. And I think in many ways that's an integral component to tolerance. We have to be able to recognize the uniqueness of the people around us. And even though that doesn't sound to be a very profound thought, I think it's one worth considering, certainly worth reflecting upon. Thank you, Joyce Scott, for your refreshingly truthful narratives, each laced with wisdom and soul. Go to Facebook for Shannon's rundown on next week's guest, Sarah Alavi, with her buddy, Rocco. And to our listeners, it's all about you who continue to make So What's Your Story, Houston's original live story show, a truly great show. Don't move, because Scooter's up next with The Inner Side to complete the backside of his Power Hour on KPFT 90.1 and make 90.1 a part of every day and make it a habit to tune in every Thursday at 10 p.m. for So What's Your Story. And ease into the weekend right. You keep loving a great story, and I'm going to keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. I'm Dr. Hank, reminding you that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.